Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Just a heads up, I can see that you've got this whole show scripted out, so
no, we
you,
don't.
Yeah, you know what?
You might want to get back on point.
I am a radio icon.
Let me
and
see.
By the way, so are you.
Hi, I'm Max, and hi, I'm Mike. Here's the Oddcast.
You are a pussy.
Everybody's dodging us.
Everybody's dodging us. Why is that?
There's no reason to talk to us.
Because most of what you say is gibberish. That's why.
Ladies and gentlemen, Max Tolkoff.
Are we rolling?
This is all the best of.
It's
Tolkoff.
Not.
Let me just tell you right now.
Oh, it's best of nothing. Of. Listen, Billy Bones is here. Let me just say this one thing.
We got an email in, by the way, from one of our listeners.
Why can't I just finish my thought?
And then because I just want to say, they said they loved the last show with Blair Schultz, and they want to hear more from Billy Bones, so we're keeping him around.
Billy?
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Make it count, because after today, I will no longer on this podcast be talking about the old days of 91X. We're done after today. So make it count.
Thankfully.
Whatever. Tell us what you got. Because Halloran's going to want to talk about this next year, and I'm not going to want to. Unless we talk about the new 91X or the current 91X. We got to get Garrett in here so I can tell him how awful he's doing.
Why are you going into we're discussing this is the whole thing. I'm turning this whole fucking podcast into a documentary. We're going to do a Kickstarter, a GoFundMe.
And why Kickstarter? Why not just GoFundMe or what's the other one?
OfferUp?
Indiegogo.
I don't care which one it is. We'll do all three at the same time. We'll do it the 91X style.
Billy, do you think this is a good idea?
Billy is the reason that we are here today.
I want to know if he thinks that a documentary is a good idea.
Okay. This is why it's a good idea.
It's got to be comprehensive because all the other documentaries of all the other radio stations blow. Did you see the LIR one?
I did not.
Did you see the FNX one?
I did not.
What about the BCN one?
Did not.
Which ones have you seen, Bill?
Not seeing any.
He's not seeing. Okay,
sorry.
That's good to know.
So
let me just.
Well, I've listened to you guys.
I mean, it's a good idea. Michael actually has the good vision on this thing.
I agree.
And I wouldn't give it away because who knows if this thing will ever get made. But I think it's a good idea. But it's gotta be comprehensive. It's gotta talk about stuff that no one's heard before. Right, Billy?
Exactly. Well, that's the idea. A documentary is supposed to reveal things that aren't generally known by the public. So
I don't know how you tell this story, honestly. I can't. It's in my mind. There's so much cross the border. I mean, all the trials and tribulations, all the things that we did. It's hard to distill.
Yeah, I think that it was a very unique space and time, and we were really fortunate to be there.
I love Billy is very zen about this whole thing.
I know. He always has been.
Billy Bones, who is our guest for this four-hour exposition, is the man that worked at the station after Blair, who we just had in the last hour or so, two-part episode.
No. Billy, it was a one-part. This is the final episode of the season, goddammit.
Shut the fuck up. I'm about to fucking introduce him in the way that I know how. Billy Bones was the only motherfucker at the radio station that actually knew anything about alternative. Blair Schultz knew nothing. Max Tolkoff knew nothing. Sue Delaney knew nothing. Who else was on the air at the time?
Jimmy G?
Jimmy Gilero knew nothing about it. Who else was on the air? Billy?
T. Brian Shock knew
nothing.
Yeah,
he knew
was
nothing.
Totally into the other.
In fact, he left because he hated alternative. He wanted to go play Metal Shop.
Right. That was the same with Sue Delaney. Sue left because she didn't understand or like the music.
The only man.
And Brian was
in
the same way.
The building was the Hungry Armenian. Not the Angry Armenian, but the Hungry Armenian because. Billy. Here's Billy's story.
Yeah, well, I was fortunate to be living in Los Angeles when K Rock was on the air.
How old were you, Billy?
I wasn't that young.
Halloran wants to know about your early years and where you went to school. And at what point did you know that you wanted to be in radio? Is that after Vietnam or before Vietnam? And did you ever say, "Good morning, Vietnam"?
Unfortunately, Max, I was not in radio when I was in the Army. But I was just going to say I was, you know, fortunate enough to listen to K-Rock. Being from L.A., as I was speaking earlier with you two knuckleheads off mic, I remember when K-Rock actually went on the air in 1972 as sort of a, you know, AOR hit station, if you will. And then they went off the air in 1974, but they were so free-form and open-ended, and they had the request line operators on the air because, you know, they were basically bankrupt, and the station went off the air due to unpaid bills in 74, came back on the air in 77 as a AM and FM station.
See, this man knows more than you will ever know about the format. And what did they start playing in 77?
They were huge on Talking Heads 77, that album. They were all over that. They were all over Blondie, the Ramones, and stuff that they would play the off tracks, say, by, you know, Tom Petty or the Cars, because back in those days that was considered punk rock.
Right.
So what you're saying is that in L.A.
saw the Talking Heads at UCLA in 1978 in a K-Rock sponsored show. And so then I would, being from there, when I moved down here in 79, and then I would go up to visit and stuff, and I would always listen to K-Rock. So I was able to keep up on the music. Not by any means was I completely familiar with everything.
But that, you knew what K-Rock was playing.
Yeah, and I knew what the vibe was. It's just like Rick said, Rick Carroll, that is, he said, it's okay if you want to sound like a listener. So before, with Frank Felix, it was like, just like Blair was saying, we couldn't say anything.
You had to talk like this.
Now, you didn't have to talk like that, but you just couldn't talk a lot.
Yeah.
It was time and temp.
A block of Fleetwood Mac, and that's it. Right?
But did you have a different voice back then? Did you force something on there? Did you
open up your larynx and start talking like this?
No, I don't think I ever did that, Mike.
When you do commercial, now when you're doing production nowadays and you're talking like this, do you not do that now?
Well, when you're doing a spot,
What do you do when you give me a rough idea?
Give me some copy. Here's some copy.
Mike Halloran is a complete doofus. Say that in your announcer voice.
Hold on, Billy. Here we go.
Say it.
Wait.
Bill. Are you going to read from the book?
No, but I got my glasses. I can't see.
Okay. Here, let me get to the part we were talking about. Art Bell might have worked at 91X. He might have worked at 91X. Okay. Okay. Here's Billy Bones doing a reading from Wikipedia.
What? Right there?
Yeah. Start right there.
me. Got to clear the throat. In 2003, Bell semi-retired from Coast to Coast AM. During the following 4 years, he hosted the show for many weekends on Premier Networks. He announced his retirement from weekend hosting on July 1, 2007, but occasionally served as a guest host through 2010. Classic episodes of Coast to Coast AM can be heard in some radio markets.
All right, that's good.
That's enough.
You know, that sounds like it sounded like Billy. That's kind of the way he said it on the air.
I could listen to that all day long.
Yeah. We tried to listen to it in mornings.
I remember coming to visit 91X. I remember Billy being on the air before you hired me, Tolkoff, in whatever year it was when they came out to see The Cure play, the OAT.
86?
No, prior to that.
No, wait.
84, 85.
No, I have the memo.
Yeah.
I got the memo announcing you and Pam Wolf. It was 85.
It was before then. I was invited to come. I saw them in Santa Barbara, and I saw them in San Diego because they invited me to come see them.
Who?
The Cure. Because I was the only motherfucker playing them on the radio in Detroit, so they invited me to these other shows so I could actually see them. So the point is that I remember Billy going on the air and playing, it was the B-52's album called Whammy? Whammy Kiss with the wig. What's that on your head, wig? And it was one of my favorite things we've heard on the radio is Billy Bones jumps on the air. He goes, all right, got the new B-52's. Let's needle through the record. And you start dropping the needle. And go, oh, we'll check this one. We'll try this one. We'll play this one first. This one's called, then you like read the album notes. This one's called Wig. And it's 91X. And I was like, that fucking guy is amazing. He is basically dragging me into his vinyl collection on the air. And I felt like he was my little brother. I didn't know he was smaller than me, but I just felt he was my little brother. Only to find out that he's actually way younger than I am. But that's my first memory of you on the radio. I was driving back up to L.A. super, super late at night.
Well, you know, you can actually thank Max for that in a way, because when I was on the overnight shift, when Max, you know, says, I don't know if you remember this, when you said, because T. Brian Schock had left and I was filling in. Are you listening? Are you awake? I am listening, yeah. And and you said, well, you know, if you want, you can work here. You can work this shift as long as you want. Lynch doesn't want you to, but
why?
Blah, 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 blah. I don't know. You know. What? Anyway. So my point being that
you said,
let's get down to business. And you said I could play anything I wanted before 5 o'clock, I think.
That is correct.
Because I guess you had faith in me that I knew the music well enough.
No.
And that I wasn't going to deviate.
No.
From.
No.
Okay.
No. It was because we wanted to rest the format in the middle of the night.
And
there's no reason to pound all those songs.
Listen.
So it was like, Billy, do whatever you want. And guess what? I did trust Billy.
You did. Of course you did.
I did, yeah.
All right, here's my questions for Bill. The rumor was that there was a 91X softball team game, something or other, and something along the lines of you threw out John Lynch at home or something. You pissed him off somehow. You said something untoward towards him, so he moved you from your mornings? What were you doing?
Middays. Yeah.
And he moved you to a different thing because you beat him in a sportsmanlike manner that he get really... True?
No, I don't think that's true, no.
Okay.
No.
Who would remember that? Who do we have to get on the podcast to get the...
And by the way, John Lynch didn't, like, put jocks on the air or take them off. That was not what he did.
Well, then why did you tell Billy...
What?
You just told Billy that John Lynch doesn't want you to do this. He doesn't want you to be on the air, but I want you to be on the air.
Well, that's a big lie. I didn't want him on the air, but I blame John Lynch for it. No, we wanted him off the air, but, you know, because he'd been there for so long, it's like, we can't let him go.
So John Lynch had nothing to do with it?
No.
Really?
Here's the thing, Charlie, now to know that John Lynch... Lynch would weigh in on stuff, right? Fred and I, we had this thing going, and he just kind of left us alone as long as the ratings were good.
Mrs. Fred got a thing going on. We like Billy Bones.
Yeah, but anyway, those overnight shifts where we had, you know, constantly getting new music in and... having the support of the program director to play whatever sounded good. That was great. I think that was the most fun. It was the most fun I ever had.
That was my thing.
You wanted that shift?
No, when you first hired me, I thought to myself, if I can sound as cool and relaxed as that guy that sounded like you were just, and I had no idea what the studio looked like. I just had this vision in my head that you just rolled in, you've been going through all these albums, and you're just deciding to basically... on the air, drag me through all this vinyl collection of everything that you were checking out. And when you drop the needle on a couple of different tracks with your headphones on and the microphone at the same time, I thought, fucking A, this is really revolutionary in a way that I'd never heard ever done before. So did you do that every night, or was that just that night I heard it?
No, it was. I would always play new stuff. And, we did some crazy stuff. Like, we got the idea, Max probably remembers this. Remember we had, call-ins from Grunion Runs at the beach in the middle of the night. You know, we did stuff like that, but it was just...
Can you explain to the people in the Midwest what a grunion is?
What makes you think we have listeners in the Midwest?
That's Brad Savage.
Brad Savage, what's his face? Who?
Who's the other guy?
Lenny Diana. He's in Massachusetts.
Do they have grunion in Massachusetts?
Well, grunion, for all our corn-fed listeners, is a small fish... and during the summer in Southern California, large schools of grunion wash up onto the shore of Southern California beaches. I don't know what the...
Are they like sardines? What are they like? Like bait fish?
Sort of. They're not real tasty, but it's more of a... It's more of like an activity where it's like, oh, well, let's go to the Grunion Run and we can get stoned or get drunk or whatever we want to do.
It's just they cook it in beer?
Something to do, something to do on a summer night when you just want to be down by the beach, right?
Do people know when this is going to happen? Is it like when the second full moon and all that stuff?
Yes,
the Groenian come running.
Yes, they have. That's common knowledge during the summer when when the Groenian.
So Nighty Rex put up a tent on the beach, gave away Groenian shirts. What
happened? It was Dwight Arnold. He was in this pre-tent days, and he just kind of he had a roaming band of promotions assistants, and we had that old cell phone that you had that weighed like 10 pounds.
The brick.
Yeah.
I didn't have them.
And then, it's like Dwight would give a report, and then he'd put the listeners on the phone, And we actually got a lot of people doing it.
Right.
And we gave away prizes, so it was basically just like a promotion. So
the kind of shit that radio stations should be doing nowadays, as opposed to camping out at the car dealership, giving away a six-pack of Yugos.
But, the early days, my earliest memory, perhaps...
When you were really young?
Yes.
Or at the radio
station? I looked exactly as I do now. One of my memories from my first summer at 91X, summer of 81, and I was doing the night shift. I started part-time in January of 81, and then in like June or July, they made me full-time. I was nights. And back then, Tijuana was in the process of building a new power plant because Tijuana had just exploded, as it has continued to this day. And periodically, and I mean on a regular basis, the grid would go down in Tijuana. And we, as you guys know, obviously, but the people listening don't, they were way up in the hills overlooking Tijuana. Tremendous view. But when the grid went out, there was nothing. Everything was pitch black.
Blackout.
91X at that time did not have a backup generator. And it was just crazy. It's like, okay, can't do anything. Can't see anything. And that happened repeatedly in the summer of 81.
Wow. So did you just pop outside? Because on top of the hill, not just 91X, XETV was down there with a million watts, a bunch of other stations. So what, did you just walk outside and look at this blackness?
Yeah, you couldn't do anything.
Could you see the stars at that point?
It depends. Yeah.
How long would this go? How many minutes or hours?
It varied. Remember when we used to
still
take,
happens, by the way.
Remember when we used to choose lots on how long the State of the Union message would be? Remember that?
Yes.
Yeah, that was crazy. And then, of course, we had
for the casual listener who doesn't realize that, what we're talking about is Billy started working at the station before Max, who's in the room, and right after Blair, who just is on the last show, but you would cross the border daily,
yes,
to go down and do your shift, and you did mornings, you did middays, you did afternoons, you did nights, you did overnights.
He did every shift on the clock. Here's the thing, though. Do you remember, Billy, at some point after, I think we put you on in mornings, and then you shifted around a lot for some reason.
Yeah.
I remember talking to Jimmy about, like, all right, then where does Billy go? If he doesn't do mornings, then what's the shift that's going to be good for him? What's going to be perfect? He did all these different shifts. But I remember, and there was so much pressure back then, right? If you were in any of those daytime shifts, there's a lot of pressure from everybody. I remember when you finally went to nights, you were like, I'm relieved. I don't have to deal with this bullshit anymore. Kind of. Do you remember that?
Well, yeah, I do. And I do. And I got pissed off, I admit. I reacted emotionally to something. And I did some things because, I don't know, it's sort of like I'm watching myself do it, even though I know it's wrong. And I, did it anyway. So it's almost like I had a subconscious desire to be put, where I could just do what I wanted to do, which was just to rock out, to play new music, and, to enjoy it. So I remember one of the things that I did, if you can imagine this, was there was a spot, I think it was a Guitar Trader, and the guy's, slogan was no shuck, no jive. And I came on after, and I said, oh, yeah, that's what they all say.
And what happened then?
Oh, boy, I heard him. Gilero, it's like Jimmy would never get mad, because we were buddies. Jimmy and I were buddies. We would go to Clipper games because nobody else would, right? We had tickets.
When the Clippers were here.
Yeah, when the Clippers were here.
Right.
We went to as many games as we could. So, and he asked me, he goes, the guy called up and he said this, and I just said, I had nothing for him, it's like, as far as my justification. So he just, Jimmy just kind of goes and walks away.
I'm glad I wasn't the only, there was a couple times I got hotline because then, I said Jack in the Crack after a Jack in the Box commercial.
Did you?
Yeah. Which is everybody.
Who hotlined you? Who did that? Stableford?
I don't remember who it was.
It wasn't me.
Oh, you know, no, it wasn't even a hotline. It was like the next day, it was Cynthia's account.
Right.
Because they're based here in San Diego. Jack in the Box is based here in San Diego, right? And
everybody says Jack in the Crack.
It's like Mickey D's.
Right.
Like McDonald's didn't acknowledge themselves as Mickey D's until they kind of realized that they had to do it. Mm-hmm. And Jack in the Crack to me was just like the obvious
thing.
But
it has more of it, more imagery. Jack in the Crack has imagery, whereas Mickey D's doesn't necessarily, right? But Jack in the Crack. You understand?
I love when Billy talks about imagery.
I have no idea what you're talking about. There's imagery to this name.
Jack in the Crack. So you could imagine a crack.
I'm not saying Jack. Okay, you're thinking it's J-A-C-K, new word I-N, new word T-H-E, new word C-R-A-C-K. No.
Jackin.
Oh, Jackin Crack.
Jackin the Crack. In other words, you were basically, the thing about it is, Jack in the Box, to me, when it was the only place you could get tacos. And you'd go and get those great, unbelievably after-bar food, wonderful tacos that only Jack in the Box could make. Because, no, hold on. You got to remember, in the Midwest, we didn't have, Taco Bell wasn't the shit then. So my point is that it was Jack in the Crack.
That would give you the shits. That was the shit.
We might have a sponsor here. Don't give me the fucking, seriously.
No, I love Jack their tacos, but they're like terrible fried tacos.
Doesn't matter. It's like some Mexican tacos you get are completely, but anyway, my point is, Billy, I would do that, and Cynthia was like, they don't really like that when you say that. And I'm like, what do you mean?
And they didn't shut it down?
No, they're basically like, they listen, but please don't call it Jack in the Crack. And it wasn't Jack in the Crack. You're talking about something, a sexual reference. You're talking about a vagina and a penis. I'm not talking about that.
Nobody brought that up, Michael.
No, he did.
I did. I thought it was, I've been disillusioned. But
well, anyway, so you didn't get fired.
I didn't get fired. But
to those of you getting into radio, remember, do not say anything bad about sponsors.
Don't diss the sponsors.
Or advertise. You can say nothing except, I love that car.
And it was like, and then... I got pissed off because Lynch wouldn't let me go on vacation. I'd been on vacation 6 months before, and I asked Jalero. I said, I want to go to Hawaii with my girlfriend, you know.
You had vacation time, right?
I had the vacation time. Yeah. And he goes, no, well, John doesn't want you to go because you just went. I go, that was 6 months ago. You know, so I got pissed off about that. And every time there was something that I had to do it really pissed me off.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not logical. It's not reasonable. But it's emotional, and I definitely shouldn't have done it. But there was one time I was supposed to go to McDonald's and buy some new thing they were pitching, right? It was some promotion. Buy this stuff on the way, and then take it to Rusty and Steve, and we all three were supposed to have a big, you know, McDonald's feast.
On the air.
Yeah, on the air. And I was a little bit less than enthusiastic, and, you know, Rusty started making fun of me and stuff like that.
And so what happened?
People were pissed
because you were cranky on the air about McDonald's.
He pulled his pants down and shat on.
Well, it was just my point I'm trying to make is, I guess, that I had increasingly, large numbers of these things that if I knew it came from Lynch, I wanted to do exactly the opposite.
Yep.
Yeah. It's this Armenian temper.
No, you know, you're just you're one of those guys that doesn't want to deal with the politics and the bullshit. Right, you just want to do your job, and that's the thing that a lot of people don't. The problem with jocks nowadays is that they're not able to focus on their shift for the most part. There's too many distractions.
Oh yeah,
you wanted to do your shift, right?
Yeah.
But yes, you know, the salespeople are coming at us. They want us to do promos. You got to be here, and then the PD is like, you know, your break that time was not so great. Can you do it? When you're going to talk about that, talk about this. We have those sessions, right? And so after a certain point, some people are just like, you know, let me just put me in a shift where I can just do my job. I don't have to worry about all this
nonsense. Well, I must say that because I had no idea you did anything other than overnights when I first got here because that's what I...
Are you serious?
I had no idea. He did every shift on the station.
We all came out here, actually.
I think at the end of eight, because I remember at the end of 84 when I met you, when you offered me the $10 an hour to come out and do weekends, Tolkoff.
Mm-hmm.
You and I drove out in my former drug dealer's car that I was dealing drugs for, and I arrived in San Diego.
Bad Mike.
And I was, I can say it now.
You're going to
listen.
Grind him about doing drugs?
Yeah. No, it's not about doing drugs. Selling them. Selling them.
Like the point, you, Mad Max.
I know. Pot's not even a drug anymore, is it?
No, that's right. Not. It's perfectly legal. Anyway, the point being is that I remember, I think I was probably driving from here after meeting with him back up to like Huntington Beach or whatever. I can't remember what I was doing, but I was going to Santa Barbara. That's what it was. And by the way, you could pick up 90 Rex virtually all the way to fucking Santa Barbara. But I remember listening to you gleefully at night thinking to myself, I really fucking want to work there because of you being Billy Bones. So when I met you, when I had to do my first shift down to Mexico,
I remember
you, Max Tolkoff, instructed that I would follow Billy down at the beginning of his shift and then just kind of stay there, get used to the board, and then just take over for him and then figure my own way back across the border. So I think I went on Saturday night. Robin went on like on the Friday night, or Robin went on Saturday. I went on Sunday, whatever it was. And I followed you down, whatever car you were driving in 86. Do you remember what you were driving? I think it was red. But then again, that's all you ever bought was like red cars.
Well, no, 86, I think I had a blue car. I might have had a brown car. Depends.
Okay. Do you remember what it was? Tercel? I
had a Toyota Corolla with brown Toyota Corolla with surf racks, and then I had the Ford Escort, the blue, and then I had the Subaru.
It wasn't the Justy. The Justy you bought. But I remember because my buddy John came down. Yeah, probably don't remember this, but John, who ended up becoming Julian Lennon's guitar tech, years later, he videotaped the whole thing because I said, I'm going to fucking have to watch this tape 15 times so I don't lose my way. Because there's no fucking street signs in TJ. I mean, there are, but you don't know where to fucking look for them.
Yeah, good luck.
So it was just like I videotaped on the way down. John and I came down the hill, found my way back to the border. But I watched that tape like 10 times that night. Had to plug it into the TV at the motel. And then just like watched it over and over again. Okay, turn here at the 14th taco cart. How do I count 14 taco carts? And John's like, no, just turn at the carpet store. And I go, how do you know it's a carpet store? Well, that's what carpet is in Espanol. And I'm like, what the fuck? You know, it was very confusing. But you were the man that dragged me across the border the first time.
Yes, I was.
I want to thank you for that. I want to thank you for your inspiration. Shut up, Tolkoff. He's my inspiration. He's one of the reasons that I think I sounded more like 91X, because I listened to you to figure out how to sound like 91X. As opposed to my typical.
If you had done that, we would have taken you off the air, too, and put you on overnights with Billy. The two of you could sound like each other.
No, Mike took to it. You know, Mike took to it right
away. I'm trying
to
think of another radio station in this country, even though 91X is both countries, where you have to follow the disc jockey to the air studio ahead of you, because otherwise you won't know. I had to do that for like a week because I couldn't figure it out. I followed people for a week.
So, Billy, in the early days,
yes,
it was you were doing the tape thing in advance? Were you doing the reel-to-reel thing?
No. In the early days, we were live.
You were live?
We were live.
Who took you down the first time? And where did you work radio prior to that?
Jim LaMarca. I followed him down. He was doing the night shift. This was 81. And you said, where did I work before?
Yeah, where did you get your radio experience?
I worked at KMLO in Vista, and before that...
Kumlo.
Yeah. And my route to being on the air was quite a bit different from just about, I'm sure, everybody's. Because, you know, it's just like Blair was saying, you know, he started in high school as an intern. Most people started in
college.
Can you
tell the story in less than 10 minutes?
No. I want him to take 40 minutes.
Why?
Now.
Why are you asking about his early days?
Because now you're interrupting him. It was going to take 14 minutes. Now it's going to take 45 minutes. All yes, right. Bill, continue.
So anyway.
Can you shorten it?
So
a little bit.
Before I worked up in Vista, I had actually taken 4 years off to go to college because my first job was KKOK in beautiful Longpoke, California.
Wow.
KKOK.
Yeah. And
I didn't
so after
they
that,
had a radio station.
And after that, they actually had three there, believe
Holy
it or not.
Shit.
So after.
Explain, just cause for the casual Brad Savage, Lompoc is really kind of, not, I don't want to say the middle of nowhere. It's coastal community. It's where they've set the rockets off.
Yeah, it's by Vandenberg
Air Force.
Central California coast.
Between Santa Barbara and Santa Maria.
Right.
A little bit inland. I have no idea what it's like now. Obviously, it's built up. But anyway, they had three radio stations.
What format were you running?
It was, you know, your basic small market,
you know, hybrid MOR. It was a, you know, the station went off the air at sundown, and you know, when I worked in the mornings, I had to, you know, like, take a bunch of boards that were, you know, security things, you know, unlock it, turn on the transmitter, do all this stuff.
Right.
Right.
Did you do AG reports?
AG.
Agriculture? Because when I drive to San Francisco all the time and I listen to these tiny stations in the middle of nowhere and they do these commercials for your AG needs, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, what the fuck? Agriculture?
We had something like that. It seems like maybe it was Pet Patrol or something.
Agriculture will be like, hey, this afternoon the rain's going to come in. You can turn your AG water off. At like, what the fuck are you talking about, you people?
Yeah, it was small market. But like I said, they still had three stations. So after that, I said, small markets, not so much fun. So I said, GI Bill will give me money to go to college. So I took 4 years off, went to college. I should have, you know, majored.
You did Vietnam, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Billy served in Vietnam.
Yes.
I thank you for your service, young man. If it wasn't for people like you that give a shit, we wouldn't be here to, and it'll take this because you are the only guy that I know will shut down some of these right-wing people who basically are warmongers that have never, ever, ever signed up, and you served. And when I see you go off on Facebook on these assholes, I'm waiting for the moment where they're like, well, what the fuck do you know? And you go, I know everything because you saw it all.
Yeah.
Very nice intro, Mike.
Yes.
Here's the thing,
yes,
Billy.
Yes, Max.
I forgot what I was going to ask.
Okay.
Because he annoyed me
so you're
much.
In Lompoc, and you say, fuck small market.
Yeah, yeah. So I go back to L.A., and I go to college for 4 years. I get a speech degree from Cal State Northridge. And then I moved down to San Diego in 79 with every intention of actually going to law school, because I knew a bunch of people that lived down here that were all in law school. But my score on the LSAT wasn't real good. I mean, I could, you know, a lot of people take it two or three times to get a higher score so they can get into law school. But I said, nah, I think I'll get back into radio. You know, I think I always wanted to do that.
Right.
Because I never, even when I was a kid, it was like, you know, work, a job, what is, what, you know, what? I mean, I always
was worked. This before or after Hawaii? What did you do Hawaii?
Well, I lived on a shack on the beach in Hawaii. This would have been 1973.
Okay, 73 in Hawaii.
Yeah, yeah.
But I won't bring up the porn thing, just so you know. I don't want to bring up the porn thing.
Well, now we have to.
No, right? I don't want to bring it up.
Okay.
Do you want to talk about the porn thing?
Because I don't think we should talk about the porn thing. But in 73, when you were living there on the shack and the beach.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's not when I was doing porno, though.
Oh, I'm sorry. That was a different
time? I thought this was a joke. You didn't actually.
Well, no, I actually did. No,
you did?
I was living on the... Here's the scenario.
Wow.
Right? I was living on...
How did you not know this, Tolkien?
I'd never heard this before.
I was living on the beach in on Oahu, believe it or not, between Makaha and Yokohama, a place called Makua, right? Bunch of us hippies, right? We're just, you know, we built shacks there because the thing was the state and the military didn't know who had jurisdiction over this particular part of the coast, of the beach, right? So just, and there were a lot of, not just hippies from the mainland, but some, you know, characters that were hardcore, you know, just laying low from the police on Oahu, right? So after maybe half a year or so, we moved, I moved into a house in Makaha with a bunch of people. And in a fairly complicated story that I'm not going to relay here.
Thank God.
Yes, exactly, Max. I'm trying to edit myself for you. Got sort of forced out of there, right? So me and this dude, one of the roommates, there was like, I think four or five of us, but two of us just got heavied out, right? And when I say heavied out, we had gangster types told us, and we were fortunate that we weren't there when they came looking for us, but we got the message, get out. So we split. And we got this place in Waikiki that was like, you know, just, I mean, there was just, you know, smoke coming out of every, you know, orifice. And, you know, the sort of thing where a guy would be sitting on the steps and a cop would walk by and go, hey, bro, you come here. And the guy takes off running, you know. So suffice to say that everybody in there was, you know, just a hippie, you know, selling weed or whatever, right? So my friend that I was roommates with, he was actually... on the run from L.A. because he had done porno in L.A. and
when it was "quote unquote" illegal.
Exactly. So he was escaping to Hawaii, and so needless to say, you know, we you start drinking or whatever, and he'd say, "Hey, man, we got to get us, you know," and all this. So we got involved with this one guy that he had hired as, you know, the
DP.
The photographer.
Or the fluffer.
The DP.
He wasn't
director of photography, not...
DP, you mean double penetration?
Yeah, he was
director.
It was DP.
Director of photography.
We know what that means.
He shot some footage of my buddy, you know, doing some...
Your butt?
My buddy.
Now who's being childish?
Doing... you know, having intercourse and various other things, but he split. He split, took off with the tape, figured he would market it himself, right?
Right.
So my friend talked me into actually being behind the camera and at a certain point running into the frame and rear mounting the woman, right?
I love it. Rear mounting.
The idea was this. It was like...
Sir, where would you like this dash cam installed in your car? Well, I'd like it rear mounted, if you could, please. As soon as I get off this woman, I rear mounted her.
Dash in the back of the car, for Christ's sake. The rear dash.
Just like I ran in and rear mounted her. Why don't you say I fucked her in the ass?
That's the technical one.
Because I'm trying to explain. It wasn't like that. It was like, okay, the premise was... Right?
Are you saying there was a plot or the premise?
Holy shit.
Well, here was the plot or the premise, depending upon your perspective. My friend said, okay, you wear this little beret, okay? Really, seriously. And you're naked, right? And before I haven't thought about this in like forever.
I know that you
brought it up. So my friend says, here's the plan. I'll be doing this chick, and then the frame will go on to you, and you'll be like the frustrated director who's like just, you know, moving his hands, making all sorts of
motions
and everything like that.
The director that comes in and rear mounts her.
Exactly. I go in, I run into the frame, and I knock him away from the woman, and I rear mounted her. Mad Max.
Okay, so...
Well, so wait.
It wasn't simulated.
It was real, right?
Yeah. And it's not easy either.
Did we see your pee-pee?
Yes. Because here's...
But these were loops, right, that they used to sell to porn palaces back in the day. These weren't videotapes. This was film, right?
Right, exactly. This was...
I've seen that show. What's it called? What's the TV show on Netflix?
Got me.
The one that my wife watches
all
the time?
The Deuce?
The Deuce.
Yeah.
They were talking about the loops, you know,
right,
they put loops and stuff. So chances are, if we can go back to 1973 and a half, somewhere in Times Square, is Billy's pee-pee rear-mounting with a beret.
What I remember about that was, you know, first of all, it was really difficult to keep from laughing, you know, because the whole premise. But
did you have an erection? Could you maintain?
Yeah. He's Armenian, for Christ's sakes.
All right, sorry.
But I gotta say, it was not pleasurable. The sexual part of it was not pleasurable.
Why not?
Because you have these incredible. We had to have all these lights. You know, right. I mean, to the point where it was just, really hot and, you know, sweating and everything like that. And then when you shot your wad, you better shoot your wad so the camera can see it, or it's no go.
Yeah,
right? Yeah.
So you have to do it again and again and again and again.
Yeah,
come again.
And it's
guys can't do that.
That's why they pay the guys the big bucks. Did you get paid?
We did get offered a small amount because it didn't turn out very well. We were offered a small amount. We had
like 10 cc worth.
No. It was said.
You know, that's where they got their name from, right?
No.
10cc.
No.
The band got their name from the amount of ejaculate a man normally puts out.
Is this true?
10cc.
I believe you.
If you don't believe me,
you know all this wacky shit.
After all these years, if you don't believe me.
I do believe you.
Thank you.
Billy, did you do this more than once?
Yes.
Did you do it more than once?
Twice.
You did this twice?
Yeah. Well,
did you wear a beret in the second one?
Well, yeah, it was just a continuation. We're trying to get a... Anyway. It was edited together.
Trying to get a three-picture deal.
And my friend had a woman that he knew that was supposed to be able to distribute these, anything that we could produce in the Orient. But she, in between the time that we started and we finished, you know, she lost her job. So we took it down to Chinatown, down to Hotel Street, right? to where they had
in Hawaii.
Yeah. Right. Hotel Street. I don't know. I have no idea what it's like now, but back then it was like all the porno joints, you know, the and all that kind of stuff. And so we took it. I remember there was this sort of masculine Chinese woman that had the full on, you know, butch haircut.
Right.
Butch. And she was, it was, it's like, it was crazy to have her put on the film and hear her reaction to it. You know, you would have thought she was watching her grandchildren or something, you know, play on the slide. She's going, oh, look, he's doing this. And, oh, she likes it. And, you know, and it's just.
Well,
like,
did she like your performance?
No, she didn't like it that much because she knew there was a point at which I was simulating. She goes, hey, it looks like he's not even doing it, you know. So
I can't imagine.
She goes, I'll give you $50 for it. And so my friend said, no, we, you know, it's worth
we need
more.
52.
he wanted to keep it, and I lost track of him, so I have no idea whatever happened to the
actual film.
Yeah, to the actual
I
film.
I want to say that I'm surprised that Tolkoff has never heard the story before.
I've never heard it. You don't talk about it.
That means you haven't heard my John Lennon story?
I don't think I have, no.
Wait, before you tell the Lennon story.
Okay.
Because Billy was on the overnights and I was doing the nights, sometimes in the daytime I'd go hang at his place in PB, and I just thought this is the ultimate fucking cool thing. You're right on the edge of like La Jolla and PB. He basically lived behind the supermarket, so he could just walk downstairs, go shop, and come back up. Yeah. And I basically had this iconic lifestyle. Iconic? Idyllic lifestyle.
Yeah. There you go.
He had this idyllic lifestyle, and I thought to myself, if I can die a happy man like Billy Bones, living in a fucking, basically a studio, you were in a studio.
Yeah, it was a unique place.
Tastefully decorated, right next to the, it was not a Vaughn's then, what was it? Safeway.
Alpha Beta.
Yeah. But I just thought, I will be the coolest motherfucker on the planet. And, of course, I didn't do that. I tried to go to K-Rock in 88. But I just want to say that this is the idyllic lifestyle. You told me the porn story back then. And I kept thinking to myself, well, I didn't realize it was on real film. I thought it was a video camera, because video cameras were the shit back in the in the mid-80s. Yeah, but you're talking the 70s.
Yes. I haven't thought of that.
So chances are there's no digital, because I've always said nowadays anybody could do a porn tomorrow and put it up porn, exactly. YouTube. Pornhub, all that stuff, and nobody would know. And nobody would know, because there's 50 billion of these things now.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I would recognize Billy. What are you talking about? I'd pick him out of a lineup right away.
I had long hair.
Yeah.
And back in those days, correct me if I'm wrong.
I had all my hair.
You had all your hair, but you had hair, and back in those days, nobody trimmed or shaved, so it basically looked like monkeys running around.
Uh-huh, he loves a monkey.
You know, just when I thought it was embarrassing to sit behind the glass in a focus group and, you know, watch the people criticize you for being on the air, you know, the shitty jock, or he's a pervert or whatever, and you're being air-checked by some crazy woman in Hawaii who's watching you
fuck. Or fake fuck.
And then she's like, yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's more intense. It was much more intense than
they hadn't developed all the new positions yet. That was the whole thing. They hadn't quite got to the spread eagle downward dog.
By the way, hair's coming back. I don't know if you know that.
Hair?
Hair.
What the fuck does that have to do with Billy's porn
my
career?
John, do you want to hear my John Lennon story?
Yes.
Okay.
Because I'm tired of talking about porn.
This is...
with Halloran in the
this
room.
This is nearly porn, no.
It makes me hot and bothered.
This was... actually, late 73, not too long after I got back from Hawaii, and I was in L.A. And it was, you know, strangely enough, it was the same dude that my buddy, we both came back to L.A. at the same time, and he was, you know, super stud. Women just, you know, went crazy over him. Anyway, he was dating the woman who was at the door on the second story of the Rainbow Room up on the Sunset Strip, right? So... the upper floor of the Rainbow Room, you only get to go in if you're a rock star or movie star, somebody in the business, right?
Have you been there, Max?
Yeah.
Okay.
So.
Because I was in the business.
So, yeah, the business.
The business.
So, anyway, so we get in there, and my friend goes off somewhere, and I'm just sitting at the bar by myself, and then my friend runs up to me and goes, John Lennon just came in. So John came in. He was with a 6-foot-tall African-American woman that would probably, I would say, was a model, right?
Grace Jones?
No, much better looking than Grace Jones. Very, just classic. and, you know, taller than John. I mean, the whole
for
thing.
For you younger program directors, Grace Jones, very stunning.
Yes. Anyway, so I'm sitting at the bar, and, you know, people are freaking out, and I'm just, you know, I'm just sitting there. So after a few minutes, John actually walks up to the bar, okay? And he's coming directly towards me. He's about as far as I am away from Mike Halloran, which is approximately 4 feet.
Arm's length.
No, yeah, arm's length. Yeah. He's coming up to the bar, right? So as he goes up to the bar, I just kind of nod to him nonchalantly, and he nods back. He orders his drink, and then he's standing there, and I said, how's your trial going, man? And he goes, pretty good, pretty good. Because at the time they're trying
That's McCartney. You're doing McCartney. But go ahead.
Well, that's the closest I can get.
No, it's Ringo.
Oh, jeez.
Come on.
Anyway, he goes, yeah, pretty good, pretty good. So he gets his drinks, and by this time people are starting to mob him. And I said, well, maybe there'll be justice in America yet. John gave me the fist.
Ooh.
And walked off, man. So it was crazy.
Was he wearing a white suit and long hair in those days?
Nope. He was dressed, you know, just like pretty normal.
At any time when you were talking to him, did he go, number nine, number nine, number nine?
No, but he did say this.
Number nine.
Billy, when you get on that radio station down in Tijuana, don't ever play any Beatles. Don't ever do it.
Don't believe in Beatles.
That doesn't sound like John Lennon either.
Play Billy Idol covers of my music. I'm sick and tired of doing things.
What is this? Sound like you're from New England. Billy Idol covers.
All right, look, before you go.
He's not going anywhere.
All right, before we go, I want to segue to current events just briefly.
Oh, shit.
Can we? Or do you want to talk about
some other
nonsense?
You want to get to 79, 80? What do you want to get up to?
I want to find out what you guys... never mind. I want to know.
I'm interested.
I want to know. I want to talk about this bill before Congress that is going to make radio stations pay to play music.
It will not pass.
Have you heard of this, Billy? Have you been watching this?
I have not.
Basically, it is since the 20s, 30s, 40s, when recorded music came out, radio stations would give copies to radio stations that were royalty-free.
Did I say
record labels?
Yeah. What did I say? No, you didn't. You said radio stations.
Okay, record labels.
William McCorker, play it back, please.
They would send copies, and the versions they sent out to retail would say on it, not for public performance, blah, 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 but they would send promotional copies, which means they wanted to get their records promoted, and if you added a record, they were giving you a gratis license for broadcast. There are people out there, certain artists, and this is where I'll tell you where I'm split on it, certain artists feel that their material is being used and they're not making any money, where streaming is not paying them as much either, because they're making like 0.00007 cents per stream. They've decided that they want to go after broadcast licenses to tell them that they have to pay. Even though BMI, ASCAP, CSAC make money, and we split it up. Mexican stations, by the way, never did. So at 91 Rex, we never did this. But every U.S. station I worked at, you'd fill out the forms. They would aggregate, and they would pay the artist for royalties based upon how many spins you did per year. Now it's all digitally done, but radio stations, I think what do you remember it was at FNX? How much are you putting out a year? About $80,000, $100,000 a year?
For what?
For your BMI ASCAP.
You know, I don't know. I don't know what the figure is on that.
You can call that guy, but he's dead. But
yeah.
What?
But I think you're right. I think for most major markets, it's a six-figure thing.
Right. The bigger the market, the more money.
The more money you pay.
$150,000, $200,000 a year. But smaller markets, so small market station may pay like $20,000, and it goes towards the artist, and they divvy it up. The new bill is that they want to charge you per spin extra on top of the BMI, ASCAP, and CSAC. And Congress is trying to get it put through with the help of some artists. Do you remember who the artists are, Max? Are you looking that up?
Metallica. This Metallica one.
I don't think Metallica. I think Metallica got burned. They learned their lesson from going after Napster, because people are like, fucking rich motherfuckers, jump in your helicopter, come down here and stop me from taking an MP3, which sounds like shit, and playing it on my shitty stereo. There was a couple of artists, you know, but here's... Just so you know, because like you asked the question, I honestly think that artists like Pink Floyd, the Zeppelins of the world, they're not putting out any new albums. And if classic rock radio is going to continue to milk their product without paying for it, I think the artists have a right to demand something from them, whatever it may be, whatever they can get is probably what's going to happen. But if you're a new artist and you're trying to get promoted and you want airplay and stuff, there should be some sort of a remuneration that if you play...
Remuneration?
Yes, Max.
All right. Thank you.
Is it
remuneration?
Okay.
Remuneration.
Well, whatever it is. Let me, you know what? That's fucking funny. Max, talk for a minute here because I'm going to find out why I've been pronouncing it wrong all these years.
I'm trying to find the article with the organizations that are behind this bill that is now going to Congress. All I can think of is that nobody talked to radio. It's a terrible idea because this guy claims that they're doing this because, in their estimation, radio has made millions and millions of dollars off of artists, which is a ridiculous concept. It's not, we don't make any money off of artists. You know, they're claiming that artists.
Well, technically,
success,
technically, if you have a really good classic. Right. Okay. Do you want to tell, you want to tell Max how wrong he is?
What?
Remuneration. Thank you very much. I rest my case.
Remuneration.
Jeez. Nah. All these years.
Okay. Getting paid for something you did.
All right, fine.
Pieces of shit.
My point is this, is that they think
radio stations don't get
radio
rich
stations,
from it.
We don't get, no, we pay ASCAP and BMI. Here's the thing. We use their music, okay,
but we get a
to
free...
try and get more audience. And the more audience we get, then the salesperson from the station goes out and sells advertising.
Oh, is that how it works?
Yes. But apparently nobody on that side of the music industry understands how that works.
But if you're Don Henley and you wrote a song 35 years ago and they keep milking your song, TV, if they put it in as a promo, they have to go for a license to use it.
Right.
Because I think you heard the story
about Jim Rome,
right?
But here's my ultimate question about the making radio pay thing. So an artist becomes huge, okay? Billie Eilish becomes huge, sells a zillion records. Does the radio industry get a piece of that because we help to contribute to her success?
Well, this is what you and I discussed on the phone earlier. Billy, this is what we discussed. Should we start charging record labels, as if any of us still work in radio, to use our airtime? Should we say, you guys want us to pay the artist, then you have to pay us for promoting your artist? In other words, treat it as a commercial. It's a 3-minute commercial for Billie Eilish. How long do you think that'll last? They'll obviously go, oh, no.
Right.
They'll give you a gratis license for it.
So my ultimate question is, how are they going to administer this if they do pass it? It seems ridiculous. I mean,
How far has it gotten?
It's
in the House?
It's in the House. Okay. And they have...
Has it been approved?
No. Okay. They haven't voted yet. I want to be called as a witness. I want to go to Washington and sit there and go, you're out of your fucking minds.
But don't bring up the story about we play you to get millions of listeners, because that's the whole, they're going, yeah, exactly.
Well, that's the way radio works, yeah.
Yeah, but they're going to say, that exactly, you're using our talent, you're using our music.
Yes, but you want to be, you play the label / artist, but you want exposure because you need airplay. Make this thing happen.
Exactly, but my point is there needs to be something at a certain point when top 40 radio or classic rock radio, if you're breaking new artists, if you're helping them, get to a certain level, then you should be, what's the term I'm looking for? You should be let go of the obligations because you're helping them get to that level. But once they get to the level where they've sold over X amount of millions of copies of something, then top 40 radio just picks them up and basically is stealing their art to say that, oh, we got more listeners than you. Well, fuck you. Pay for it. Same thing with classic rock. Classic rock has been basically for 30 years. Right? They've been on, classic rock's been on the radio for 30 years. They have been basically playing the same shit over and over again. And Eric Clapton ain't getting rich from it anymore. He's not selling any new albums. 461 Ocean Boulevard is not selling any more copies this week than it sold last week.
Yeah, okay, so it's out there, but I'm trying to understand what the point is. All right, he's not going to make any more money off of that, but he might. I mean, people play catalog, and then people who've never heard these artists go out and buy them.
I'll give you the example.
Joni Mitchell,
the Brady Bunch, all of those TV shows that happened before, they didn't know what to do when syndication and all these cable things popped up. So it was all these artists, quote unquote, that basically signed a contract with Fox Television, United Artists, whatever it was, that produced these TV shows, used their likeness, and now they're making money in syndication, but they're not giving it to the people that were actually in it or on it. So the record label the artist wants to get paid by somebody because their art now is being used in a different way.
Yeah, but all right, so that does happen with classic rock. Every year they do an accounting, right? They figure out what stations are playing what, and they pay the artist. Does the artist want to pay more? Even if it is classic rock, you get money for all those.
That's the difference between publishing and mechanicals. It's between like if you look at it from a point of view of what television has to do to license things, because television just doesn't play records on the radio. They just play clips of things, but they have to pay to license something. Jim Rome, greatest example I can give you is when Jim Rome first came to the 90 Rex building, because Tom Perry, our good buddy Tom Perry, was his engineer.
Buckethead, Tom Buckethead.
Tom would come to the 90 Rex library and pull bumper music for Rick. One of the songs he pulled at the time was underground, cool, really set the tone, was Welcome to the Jungle by Guns N' Roses. As a theme song, coming from a Mexican radio station, the song was never licensed by Guns N' Roses. We didn't license it to use it on Extra Sports, right? Years later, Scott Litt, who produced all those great R.E.M. albums, wants to do an album with Jim Rome. He basically contacts Jim Rome, and Jim's, why the fuck would I want to do an album? He's like, because it, like, you know, and he explains it to him, and he goes, okay, fine, I'll do it. So they did the album. As they were putting the album together, because Scott Litt works for a record label, he had to go get the song licensed, and he went to Guns N' Roses people and said, I want to license this. And they go, oh, we would never license our music to anything like this. And he goes, but he's been using it as the theme for like the last 5 years. And they go, he has? Because they didn't know. So suddenly it's like, uh-oh, Guns N' Roses didn't know. They had to basically pay for the licensing, because now he's up in L.A., he's doing the show from L.A., so it's coming off of American transmitters as opposed to the Mexican one. And bingo, Guns N' Roses got a payday, and then they agreed to license it to him because they realized it would be good because it's been his theme song forever and everybody loved it. But Tom Perry is to blame for that, by the way, because Tom didn't give a shit because we didn't have to license shit when you're coming out of Mexico.
Speaking of R.E.M., so the other day I was in Whole Foods. Don't ask me why. I know it's whole paycheck, but I had to go in there for something. And I'm rolling around in the aisles, and all of a sudden, song comes on. Now, you know, in Whole Foods and all these things, they're running Spotify or whatever it is, and somebody had the alternative channel on, I guess. I don't know what it is. So I'm going down the aisle. I'm in Whole Foods with all the other hipsters and the, you know, the man buns and the hair and the women in the leggings. It's great. It's great to people watching Whole Foods. And all of a sudden,
can you shorten the story for about 20 minutes?
No, I'm using you as an example of how I tell stories.
All I want to know is William the Corker laughing?
He is.
You love to embellish. You are fucking Anthony Bourdain telling your stories.
I am not. You're the one. Bill, I mean, William the Corker, doesn't he take much longer than me? He's so verbose.
I interrupted you without you telling me to shut up. Okay.
All right.
So you're in there, the man buns, the women with the leggings.
Right, and I'm pushing
kale.
The cart.
You forgot to mention kale.
Kale, and I
chai.
I had a turkey in the basket there, a big frozen turkey. And all of a sudden, Don't Go Back to Rockville comes over the speakers. The JBLs hung from
how
the
ceiling. How did it start? What's the beginning of that song?
Well, it's a guitar, you know, and then it's a...
Don't go back to Rockville.
So it was like one of those moments where it's Don't Cross the Streams, right, from Ghostbusters. Don't do it. And here I am in the hipster capital of the universe listening to R.E.M. from the 80s. My pants exploded right there in the aisle. Boom, came flying off. I mean, where in the world are you going to... I mean, imagine Billy's like, what are hipsters?
Okay.
Who are these people?
Let me explain some.
Did you know that?
Whatever. Let's say it was coming off a Spotify playlist.
Appropriate
R.E.M.
and yet
R.E.M. was making approximately...
What's Max's point, though? I mean,
your point is what?
The story is merely...
I don't
okay.
know. The story was being in Whole Foods and hearing R.E.M.
Max was in a store the other day, and he recognized a song on
the
PA.
80s.
No, on the PA. I was in a store once. Here's the trippy thing for me is I'm in a store, and I'm actually hearing, and this is probably in a course of 1 week, Anya?
No.
On the overhead speakers?
Yeah.
Mraz on the overhead speakers, but not the hit. Mm-hmm. A Jewel song. And I think it was like, how weird is it that I knew like three people? And so at one point I'm like, I said, you're on the... And of course it does. I would imagine that doesn't happen like all the time, but they must get like, hey, I'm listening to you. Yeah, I'm in the Whole Foods, whole paycheck, man, the kale and the chai tea and the women's leggings and the man buns. And you're on the radio. But here's the thing. Those people pay to license those songs.
Yes.
And
yes.
That's why they want to get it licensed for radio.
I'm
that's
just
what they're
fascinated.
Trying to do.
I've been in other places. Like we have a Smart and Final in our neighborhood. And we live in a very Hispanic neighborhood. And it's starting to become a little bit gentrified, but not much. Anyway, you go into this Smart and Final, huge also food store, basically. Yes. And I'm constantly hearing Depeche Mode and The Cure. And there's nobody around me that looks at all like an alternative listener. I mean, these are long-term families that have been in this neighborhood. I'm just fascinated that you hear this stuff all the time. Like, I don't know if people choose it and put it on the overhead system or it just shows up.
And another thing relating to what you're saying is, have you noticed how a lot of television commercials are using 80s music?
Yes.
I mean, it's crazy. It's insane.
Well, there's a reason. There's a reason for that.
Of course.
One of the reasons, and I love it when it happens, because when you hear the Icicle Works being used as a song for Xarelto or whatever the fuck it is or some... Oh, you know what it is? No, it's not. It's
Humera.
No, it's not Humera. It's the Fidelity, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Or whatever it is. But
are
it's
you
like,
thinking the Human League song? Or is
No, there's like the Fidelity song is when you're following the arrow.
Uh-huh.
Oh, it's the Fix. It's
oh yeah,
Saved by Zero.
Saved by Zero.
They're using Saved by Zero. The reason for all of this happening is because the people at the heads of these agencies are getting people, because Fidelity is trying to get motherfuckers like you and you to bank with them and do your savings
no,
with them.
We know why it's working, but you're not
explaining
the thing
about it,
why they're using that song.
Because they're trying to trigger...
By the way, Billy, it's a trick question because I know why and he doesn't. But let's hear
They're
what
trying
he says.
To trick your emotions into thinking that, oh yes, OMD, I love these people. Wait, I'm going to go follow that green line and bring all of my money in there because I am a common human being. You hear it as something you used to play on the radio a million times.
No, listen. I was in advertising. I was a madman on Madison Avenue. Here's what happens, okay? So the ad agency is sitting with the client, all right? It's like doing spots on radio, right? You're going to produce the spot. You look at the client, and here's what we want to talk about. Here are the points. Here are the bullet points. Okay, go away and do the spot. Same things happen in advertising. So the big national ad agency is talking to the big national client, right? And the ad agency goes, all right, what are you selling here? Oh, well, zero. Zero's the number. We want people to know that it's 0% down and you're going to save 0%. So the ad agency goes away and they have another meeting after the client goes and they go, well, zero, huh? Zero. How do we, what's a good way to fool around? What kind of ideas does anybody have utilizing zero? What kind of songs are out there? So then they sit there and they just literally figure out, well, what kind of song can we use that has zero in it? And they do the research, right? They'll do a Google search. The Fix comes up. A whole bunch of other songs come up, and they listen to it. And if there's something that sounds like what they're talking about, that's how they select it.
Oh, yeah.
That's all it is.
Yeah. I know.
It's no more than that. Believe me.
Isn't that what I just said?
No. You think that, well, they picked the song because they want all these people to come and put their money in the bank, and that's why they chose the Fix. That's not it. Could have been anybody. He's not even listening anymore. Look at him.
What time is it?
He tuned out.
I didn't. I was just about to show you something.
All right. Can we go now?
No, you can't go now.
Why not?
I was going to show you this. Tell me, why is this being used on a cruise ship commercial? Because they went, oh, we want a bunch of people on a cruise
that
like Iggy Pop.
Listen to the lyrics.
I'm worth a million in prizes. I do liquor and drugs and a sex machine. He's going to buy another striptease. It's like, that's got nothing to do with fucking...
What's the chorus?
Lust for Life.
There you go.
By a guy.
Yes. That's why I'm saying it doesn't matter to these people.
It doesn't say it in the fucking... It just goes...
I know. There's so many commercials where you know that
I was a madman. I was on Madison Avenue.
You know why
I was trying to get people to smoke.
But they don't often put two and two together. That's the problem. A lot of these...
They use Buzzcocks now. It is the emotional attachment that they are trying to get to have people go like, what the fuck? And by the way, I love it because it's about time that the musicians that we used to play on the radio get the licensing money... Black Keys survived on probably 17, 18 syncs on one album. They fucking sold it to everybody. Cadillac, you name it. They probably sold it to Cadillac, Audi, and fucking Lincoln all at the same time because they were like, they needed money to
be
able to tour.
Have you seen the new Beamer commercial where they're using OK Go? Here it goes again. That's brand new.
No, yeah. I haven't seen that one.
So it's an OK Go song.
I'm talking about
the big one.
I'm talking about ancient punk rock. Icicle Works, all that kind of stuff. I'm talking about the good stuff.
Icicle Works was not
Depeche
punk
Mode.
Rock.
There's can't get enough.
Yeah,
I forget.
Yeah, that's not a commercial too.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
That's what he just said. Billy just said that. Can you believe he just said that? He just said that.
All right, I'm done with you now, Billy.
All right,
this
Billy.
Is our last show of the year.
I would just like to know this. So, for
Max.
Years,
yes, Max.
For years after you,
I mean, Mike. Sorry. I'm years, dizzy. I don't know who I'm talking.
Years
to.
After you left 91X because you left. When did you actually physically bail out of there? When they moved into the one building? When was that?
Yeah, that was 2001, I believe.
2001, and you started just doing pretty much every production thing for every Clear Channel. Was it Clear Channel?
Yeah, it's Clear Channel. Too.
We refer to it here as iHeart Radio.
iHeart, definitely.
But it wasn't iHeart yet.
iHeart.
No. Because, you know, the iHeart, media stream was, the iHeart Radio thing was so popular. You know that,
that's
and Clear Channel, and Clear Channel had such a bad connotation. That's why they changed to iHeart.
iHeart
Media.
iHeart Radio.
Oh, good.
Okay, don't say it again.
Why?
Because I just think
iHeart
it's
Radio. That's what they are.
I'm asking Billy a question. I'm trying to wrap this up.
Yes.
No, you're not. You were like,
he retired.
So what happened in 2001?
He retired.
It's 18 years ago.
He retired from the business.
William the Cork.
Well,
he does. He does. Help. You do the occasional production nowadays.
Somebody's mic off. Something.
Well, I'm waiting for that next order, Mike. Actually, the only creative thing I'm doing right now is I'm taking a writer's workshop class, and always been interested in writing. Did a bit of it when I lived in Hawaii.
Right.
And so now I'm learning about it.
Have you studied the letters? How many letters have they given you to study?
Just two so far.
A and B?
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly. No, it's really interesting stuff, learning a lot, and, I'm looking for something else to do creatively. So, BonesBilly at AOL.com.
BonesBilly at AOL.com. He's so old school, he's using an AOL.
AOL? That's almost as bad as Mike and I having an ATT.net account.
Actually, it's good because when Google Mail crashes,
you still
AOL moes. AOL is still
because nobody's on it.
Exactly.
Are still you on Friendster as well?
Friendster.
Yeah.
No, I'm not.
He's on Friendster.
I mean, I have a Gmail account.
Do you have an MP3.com account? Howard still does.
No, I don't. Not anymore.
Yes, do you have?
I have residuals coming.
MySpace account, Max.
Yeah, I do.
Didn't we all? We all used to.
Everybody had it.
Yeah.
So before we let you go, any amazing stories about the old days or what you remember, like bands coming by? Because not many bands came by the studio.
Oh, my
the
God.
The first band that actually had the audacity to come to Tijuana, remember this band, 2020?
Yes.
They were the first ones to actually come to... And I'm trying to think who else.
Oh, I'll tell you who else. And the only other band that ever showed up down there with no instructions on how to get there was Johnny Vatos from Oingo Boingo.
Oh, of course.
Well, he spoke Spanish. That's why.
Yeah.
Muy bien.
You know how to get there.
Otherwise, that's why Dwight did Backstage Pass, because bands were not coming down to Tijuana to do interviews.
There were
with
bands
us.
That came down later. Pop Elite itself showed up.
Really?
Yeah, there was a few bands that showed up. Because once Iguanas started, you were gone.
Right.
People were already
just
across
about.
The border.
I came back for that Jane's Addiction show.
Yeah, but you were gone.
That's
when,
right.
When they launched
and
it.
And you had a, what'd you call it, a Jufro?
No, I had no hair. I had my wife, Tammy.
No, you had a little.
Oh, was I growing hair out?
Yeah, you had a little bit of hair growing.
Yeah, I grew hair out before I started at FNX.
But
and
Mexico.
They didn't know that I had ever shaved my head. One day I walk in, bald. They freaked out. President of the company wanted to fire me.
Well, you know, Max, ladies and gentlemen, was well ahead of the curve as far as white guys shaving their heads. And I mean, it was like, do you remember this? What show was it? There was some show at the Spirit, and there was a woman that had, to the T, had done, remember we did those TV bits?
Yeah.
And you made yourself all up and everything like
that?
Yeah,
it was for a Halloween thing.
Yeah,
I had a blue dot in front of my silver head.
You were trying to be Mad Max the Meat from Thor.
Exactly.
And there was this woman in the Spirit Club that had done herself up like Mad Max to the T.
No.
Don't you remember that?
No.
You ran away. You were scared.
I would have taken her home and showed her my
No, you were, you were, you were, I don't think you were expecting, it was unbelievable that, that.
So she looked like the commercial.
I couldn't have done
exactly.
anything.
Exactly.
Tammy was the one that made me up, so that
No, this is pre-Tammy.
Right.
This is pre-Tammy. Sure? Positive. Okay. Absolutely positive. But what, one of the things I mentioned before we go is that a couple of the funny things that happened down in Tijuana were the strikes. Blair alluded earlier to there had to be a Mexican guy on duty at all times. So when those guys went on strikes, we couldn't be on the air. So that
couldn't
happened.
Couldn't even be in the building. They right. locked the door and they right. brought the coffee maker out in the hot plate.
Yeah, the first time that it happened to us, we knew that it was going to happen. So we actually cartimated our brakes, which, you know, that was in the old format. So, you know, there wasn't much to say, really. But it was kind of cool to be out on a Saturday night as opposed to being on the air and saying to your friends, hey, look at me and listen to me. I'm right here, but I'm on the air. And the guy goes, yeah, I was listening to you. And
that's
and,
great.
Yeah. Or when the overnights, before they had a live jock on the overnights, it would fall to me quite frequently, the midday guy, to cartimate the overnights, right? So, you know, I'd be out.
I was at fucking Trader Joe's the other day, and I got a bottle of cartamate. It was right next to the cardamom.
Oh, my God.
Sorry, anyway, cartamate yeah. means you automate
yeah,
it
yeah.
with carts.
I'm so. Sorry. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
I would listen. I'd be listening to myself, you know, driving home, and then you'd hear pause. You know, it's just like, when is Ramon going to wake up? So he'd wake up and he'd hit whatever button and it would be, oh, that was great. That was Fleetwood Mac. It's like,
so he was making you
ten
sound
seconds
like,
later,
he was yeah. making you sound like oh, you some, fell asleep.
Sometimes it was well over 10 seconds. I mean, Ramon, who was called Tonto Secreta, which is secret dummy in Spanish, because he was aspiring to be a policeman. He was the guy, and you know, he went to school, police school or something during the day. So, and then he had the overnight. So he would fall asleep on a regular basis, and we expected it, and it was kind of funny.
Do you remember the time when he actually became a cop and he had his first little patrol car and he drove it up to the station?
But that wasn't Ramon. That was Martini Weenie.
Oh, that's right. That was Martini. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, just to let you go, what do you remember about your Mexican engineers who do you remember and tell me about them? Because I want them to listen to the podcast in Espanol when you hit the SAP button.
Well, God, I hope they're all still around. The first guy that I met was Chewy, who was, you know.
Chewy was the best.
Yeah, Chewy was
Chewy apparently now great. Owns a castle in Cartagena.
Cartagena? Going.
Cartagena, yes.
In Colombia?
I believe he does. I'm just making this shit up, but it sounds good. Okay, keep going.
Do you remember Santos?
Santos Ariarte. Now, Santos Ariarte was a musician, a singer, a balladeer, and I actually, that's one of the cool things we got to do was when he came out with his record, I played it on the air.
No.
Un Día en Mayo was the track.
Do you remember
track.
The name of the band?
It was...
ready? Here we go.
No.
Espadachín.
Do you remember?
Yeah.
What was it?
Espadachín.
Was it?
Yeah, it means the dagger.
Anyway, when I played this record, like, you know, it's like Tijuana exploded, you know, the few phones we had down there. And I remember Sansón was down there and he goes, oh, is that your friend? He goes, no, it's Santos's brother who was, can't think of his name.
Yeah.
Anyway, he goes, no, it's my brother. So
Hector was his brother too, wasn't it?
Hector.
What was Hector's last name?
Hector Duenas.
There was, Hector had no brothers.
Oh, who's the other Uriarte?
That's what I'm trying, oh,
Chewy.
Santos.
Santos Uriarte.
No, Santos
Urias
and,
was his last name.
No, it's Uriarte.
What was Chewy's last name?
Isordia.
Yes, that's
Isordia.
Right.
Isordia.
It's already, yeah. And it was.
What was Billy Bones' last name? Collision.
Yeah, it was. We got really close with those guys.
Yeah,
you know, and it was funny because you know when I first went down there, there was a dog that was the Mexicans had named it Lynchetta after Mr. Lynch because they thought, oh, Mr. Lynch is so big and he is the GM, so you had to close the door when you turned on the mic because the dog was always barking, right? I mean, the dog would be barking all the time, and if you didn't close the door when you turned on the mic, sure enough, it would bark. But unfortunately, that dog, gave birth to
Here's the other good thing about working with the locals. The places that we ate that nobody else knows about.
Oh, correct.
Oh,
without a
my
doubt.
God.
And then the other places, to add to this, they would take you to the cool, cheap Mexican places you could go to. We could eat like a king for like $2.42. Mm-hmm. And then I took Rafa down a few times and went down to get lobster in Puerto Nuevo,
mm-hmm.
put him in the car, went down there, and when he saw that the bill was like, for all of us, was like $25, he's like, oh my God, that's so freaking expensive. Because that's like, to him, it was like a month's salary. And he was like freaking out. And I'm like, dude, we got it. Don't worry about it. Because he'd never, ever, ever gone to a tourist place, because why would he do? Why would he go there? But, you know, it's pretty insane. But you're right. Still to this day, because I was crossing the border every day for probably about a year and a half recently. In fact, I took Billy to one of the tourist places down there.
Yeah, it's
which was, you know, it was they were pretty expensive hot dogs in comparison to TJ.
By the way,
they were really
we
good.
Were telling the story last week. You weren't here. I wish you were. Remember the time I said to you, you were on your way down, I said, I'm hungry. Can you bring me something to eat?
Right. I brought you those hot dogs.
Yes. You brought me the street hot dogs. And either you or I said something like, well, if I eat these, I'll never have to prove my courage in any other way. I mean, it was like mayo and bacon and salsa, and you got it from a cart on Revolution Boulevard.
Yeah. Because I liked them. I thought they were good.
They were good, but you scared the shit out of me.
Oh, okay.
Those are scary-looking hot dogs.
Okay. Do you remember roughly how much you would have paid for those at the time? For how many dogs did you bring?
I don't know. Yeah, what, about three or four?
I don't know. Did you have some? I just had two.
No, I had, I don't know. Who knows?
About $1, right?
Well, let me put it this way. I can remember there was a little, you know, before Tijuana exploded, there was a little liquor store that was literally right on the way to the border. And you could get a case of Corona, back in my drinking days. You get a case of Corona for like $3, literally. A case of Corona for $3. So that gives you an indication of how much I might
So you're probably like, you know.
For
four hot dogs,
probably 50 cents or so. Much money,
not much money.
That is a lot of money.
I used to describe this to my friends. The bottom of the hill, right where the split was.
Yeah.
The guy who ran the taco cart there. Which
oh my
was
God!
One of the,
you stopped there?
No. I never stopped there.
Oh, okay.
But the
you
whole
did, didn't you?
No.
But the whole point was that when you could tell how good his business was by how, because I had front wheel drive on my GTI at the time. You could tell how good his business was because when you got to the ramp where you started going up, how far your wheels would spin in the grease because off the
That's
cart,
true.
Off the
That's
cart,
true.
All of
Come
the animal
on.
Fat would drip out and go across the road and go down towards the main road. And if you hit there and you were basically in like second gear by the time you got there, your tires just go.
I remember that.
And then grab. So if he was really busy, it was a. For like 45 seconds, you're halfway up the hill. You're starting to smell the animal fat turn into like a really cool, smelly rubber
burning
thing.
Burning tires, yeah.
And it was just like, wow, he's really busy. But if he wasn't busy, you'd go zip, and he'd be straight through. But
listen, I have a story about food that I have to tell you. Because remember the mariscos?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, the day before I was down there, I wasn't working. I figured I was doing something. I was in Tijuana, and I had like two helpings of mariscos, right? So the next day, I go to work. This is in the old formats. And I suddenly get deathly ill. needless to say, I almost filled up a trash bucket. And I can barely sit up. And Jalero calls me and goes, hey, can you hang in there a little bit? I'm going to be about an hour late. So there was nothing you could do, right? So
you just had to wait.
I had to wait. And then, you know, going across the border, you know, it's like when the car wasn't moving, I was kind of slouched over.
Ugh.
I only got sick once. And it was Hector.
Beachy
it. It was Hector making things in the hot plate.
Oh,
the hot plate in the transmitter room.
In the transmitter room.
That took us off the air.
It's amazing that it didn't blow up, but he was making quesadillas one day. And he said, you know, Mike, quesadilla. Because he's like English on him.
No English.
And he gave me a quesadilla. I got all the way home because I had it probably at the end of my shift. Got all the way home, climbing Mount Solid. I was just about to head in, and I just had to pull over on the side of the road, and I called Earl for about 20 minutes.
No.
Got home, a little bit of Pepto. And by the way, I heard this the other day. Pepto. Apparently, when you go, if you ever go to like South America, you go any place, just bring those little Pepto pills. You know, get the shots and everything, but just take one Pepto pill a day and
shots. Kill. What is it, 1953?
Yes.
Nobody gets shots anymore.
Make a bet.
So the weirdest thing about the station that people didn't know is that the last 20 yards of the road is an uphill cobblestone.
It's about 100 yards, actually.
Not even 100 yards.
It is.
Tops.
It's an S-turn.
It's paved now.
It's not. It's paved now.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's paved
But
now.
It used to be just cobblestones. And when it rained or was moist,
you couldn't make it,
couldn't make it up the hill.
Yeah.
It was like
you
trying to drive it on greased ball bearings.
What
we did was go over to the left where it was dirt. And so your
well,
left tire
if you're smart, and you bought a front-wheel drive car. Like, I didn't have a rear-wheel drive.
With front-wheel drive.
And then I bought a Jeep because I could want to make that. Because they rented. Do you remember when they rented my Jeep from me?
No.
When it was so bad down there at one point, they ripped up the road to put the sewers in at one point before they paved
and
everything.
Yeah, that was going on.
Tommy Jimenez comes up to me and goes, "Hey, Mike, want to cut you a deal. We want to basically rent your Jeep." So the jocks would have to show up at the station, jump in my car, go down. The other jock would bring the car back, and then the other jock would take. So basically my Jeep resided at the station, and you'd have to go there to get in the car.
Jeez, I wish I had that.
But they all had to learn how to drive a stick. Because, you know.
When I first showed up, I didn't have a car. I only had the bike. And when the rainy season started, the first time I left and had to go down the cobblestone, I thought I was going to wipe out.
Right, because you're like skiing on it.
I locked up both wheels, right? So I was literally going down with both
How many wheels,
wheels
does a motorcycle have?
Both wheels. Two wheels. Right? What's so funny?
What I'm saying is you should have just basically applied pressure just to the back wheel because then you could have slid down the hill.
Well, I did slide down the hill.
Without
I never
locking
went
up
over
the front.
But it was really weird.
Yeah.
All right. Wrap us up.
Yeah, I've got to.
Billy
Bones.
We've got to go.
Mike. Man of the hour. Employee of 90 Rex before Max Tolkoff, post Blair Schultz. I want to thank you very much for coming by and hanging with us.
My pleasure.
The last thing I want to tell you is, seriously, if it wasn't for you, first of all, showing me the way to get to Mexico and inspiring me before this asshole over there keeps fucking making rude motions. You're the guy that I learned how to do 91X from because you were the most irreverent motherfucker on the air. And for that, I thank you.
My
brother for the rest of my life. Hopefully, you know.
Likewise. Holy
likewise,
fuck,
Mike.
Billy.
And I love this man.
All right.
Likewise.
Love really? Why'd you have to get maudlin and weird?
Do you want to get the last word in?
Yes. Thanks for listening this year. We'll be back next year with a whole new season of The Oddcast, featuring two douchebags.
Is that the last word? Thank God.
All right.
Slam the door.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.